You're very welcome back to the second hour. Oh, no, you're welcome into it. We've only just started it. The second hour of the 9 till noon show on this Monday morning, the 9th of June. How's your students getting on heading out to their exams? Is it stressful? I haven't heard too much about it this year, so hopefully things are going relatively smoothly for everybody. There has been some little issues with one or two papers, I believe, and Dr. Joe Kelly is going to be joining us a little later on to discuss that. I don't like mentioning stuff that's coming up on the show menus because often things run away with us here, you know, on certain topics and what have you that require a certain amount of time. So sometimes things get bumped. But no, we'll be talking about that a little later on and so much more besides. Thank you so much for texting in the numbers that you are. Very much appreciative. We're very lucky here on this show. I do know some other morning shows and they get nothing. And we're blessed. We have hundreds of you messaging in, people messaging in for the first time all the time. What about Buncrana, says a listener. There are pedestrian crossings in Buncrana and they have no markings. Despite political promises, nothing changed. Have you considered your consuming AI propaganda to discredit the protesters, Greg? All the photos I've seen since this started, and I haven't seen a single Mexican flag. It's a dangerous world now with that stuff out there, letting those in power control whatever narrative they want with a few ChatGPT edits to a scene. It's video footage on the news that I saw. And there's one iconic photo. It's going to be iconic of a person upon a car waving a Mexican flag. I generally try and research. I'm open to it, maybe. I hope I haven't been done by AI. But the only flags I was able to see at this time were Mexican flags. Who's letting their daughters buy this crap? This is cream for their faces and what have you. Seriously, modern parents need to take some responsibility and control their kids' actions and spending. This is ridiculous. Girls spending hundreds on youth face cream. Boys spending a grand on FIFA. Like, it's funny how things are split down the sexes, isn't it? Because I was like going, you know, yeah, you're right about the girls. And then when you mentioned FIFA and boys, I'm like, don't take FIFA from us. It's all we have. But I take your point. Like, seriously, they say, what are parents playing at? I have four under 18s of my own, and the worst they've managed is accidentally buying a game on the PlayStation that I was able to get refunded. I remember Aaron got hold of my phone, and I'm telling you, like, you know, I'm still not loaded, but, you know, I was skint. You know when you run out, everyone, unfortunately lots of people would know, but you know where, like, you've it's Monday and you're not getting paid till Friday and you've like 70 quid. You know, do you remember post-dated checks? Jeez, that got us out of some holes. But anyway, but you know when it's like that and it's tight and Aaron got hold of my phone, he was playing a game on it and I can't remember what age he was, but he ran up like 300 or 400 quid. Now, it wasn't able to be taken because there wasn't that much in the account, but that was it. So that was Monday. All the money was gone. So there was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I was in a battle with Google to try and get it refunded. I think until such time as one of your kids has done that, either on a PlayStation or on your phone, that's when you start putting password protection purchases on. A caller says, we all know why there's a lack of any type of accommodation and the blame lies completely with politicians. So maybe the councillor should be doing something about that instead of telling people what to do with their property again. It is, you know, they're going to miss the housing targets again. There's a shortage of housing. What do we do? We try and tell people what to do with their private property. A lot of people are uncomfortable with that. And the caller's probably correct. There is a bit of deflection going on here. Let's focus on those persons with a spare house or a rental property and not on why the houses aren't being delivered by the state. Hi, I'm a healthcare worker for over 20 years throughout Donegal. I've seen in different settings abuse and neglect of older people. This has been going on for years. It's down to all staff and especially the matrons that don't act on any issues. And I've seen a matron lowered the falls in a nursing home before HICWA would do a visit. I will never work in a nursing home again. Since that expose on RTE, I've received 5 or 6 full-on serious. Now, my first instance is to say, right, refer that to the powers that be. But 5 or 6 proper cases of mistreatment of older people. Really hard to read, really hard to digest, to be honest with you. And I read a lot of stuff that's sent to me. And 5 or 6 might not seem a lot, but I'm one person with one show. Not everyone's going to contact me. And it's really, really worrying. It's really worrying. And a lot of families sort of know it went on and they're in a sort of like a purgatory that they don't know how to progress it or what they do, or the person that was the victim of abuse has passed since and they're living with it. And it's tough. It's tough. Good morning, Greg. I wonder if you'd have a discussion about staff participation in work social media. Interesting. I work in a shop and recently they've created, in my opinion, ridiculous social media posts to sell products that they are demanding staff participate in. I personally don't have any social media accounts and that was a deliberate decision. Do I have a right to refuse to take part in this? What a fascinating question. More and more businesses now are hopping on trends. A lot of it's on TikTok. And a lot of it is self-deprecating, you know, where you kind of make a little bit of a fool of yourself or you put yourself out there. So this person, excuse me, they themselves aren't on social media. But the local shop, they've either hired someone or they've got someone who's very interested in this on the staff. And they're starting to make these little videos, probably the trending stuff, I would imagine, I would guess. And I said, hey, some of it, you have to put yourself out there. And the company's demanding that all staff participate. But this caller doesn't do social media. What do you do in that situation? Does she or he have the right to actually refuse to take part in these videos? I think you know the ones we're on about, don't you? And some of the businesses do great stuff. And I never considered that maybe some of the participants are unwilling participants. But it's a very interesting question. Any insight into that, let me know. 086 60 25000. Now, before Monday's bingo numbers, I want to play a couple of requests, if that's okay with you. Starting with a good morning to Father Kieran McAteery in Ballybuffet, who celebrated his Golden Jubilee yesterday. And a massive thanks to the Villa Rose for the beautiful celebrations after from the O'Donnell family in Ballybuffet. What a wonderful milestone, Father Kieran McAteer. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. It's a year, though, isn't it, your Golden Jubilee? I don't know. I presume it is. And the Villa Rose, of course, they looked after you. They do great work out there in Ballybuffet and elsewhere. And I want to say, play a request for Sean Martin and Kerry Keel celebrating a special birthday today. Not telling us what it is, Sean, but that doesn't matter. Best wishes from Seamus and from Susan. There was some positive advancements, it would seem, in the defective concrete block scheme as announced last week. And any improvement is to be welcomed, isn't it? But if you were to look at the amount of homes rebuilt currently, or remediated for that matter, since the scheme in its various forms was launched, it's been estimated that it could take 178 years odd to rebuild the amount of homes that may well be affected by this. That would be at 30,000, which some might argue is conservative. Councillor Joy Beard of the 100% Redress Party is with me. Joy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. Right, Joy. So what is the issue here? Why is it the fact that the applications are clogged? Is it the fact that the majority of people are sitting on their hands to see what comes next? Why is progress so slow?
Yeah, well, I think those figures that you've just stated there, Greg, speak for itself. You know, we've had 102 homes remediated or rebuilt since May. Now, I do have some more information on that as of this morning. Only 30 of those 102 homes have been option one demolished. So in the 5 years that, you know, we've had two schemes running, in that time, we've only had 30 homes demolished. And as everybody knows, the science is there now, proving that every home has to be demolished, that the homes have been misdiagnosed. So those statistics speak for themselves. As far as why people aren't moving on, Greg, there's a lot of issues that people are facing moving on with this scheme. They're not moving on. There's a cap in place. That's hindering a lot of homeowners from moving on. You know, the grant payments are not covering the actual rebuild costs at the moment. Obviously, foundations are not included, which is a concern for families, you know. And again, there's no access to any temporary accommodation. We're in the middle of a housing crisis and we don't even have any temporary accommodation for people to move into. Then there's a big worry about the downgrading, obviously, of options from homeowners' engineers being downgraded by the housing agency. That's causing a lot of concern. People are stressed enough. They don't need to go through that side of things as well, which is happening quite regularly. I suppose we have the excluded properties. You know, I feel for those people that are excluded from this scheme as well. But a big thing is the upfront cost for anyone that's in a position financially to move on, Greg. They have to have the upfront cost to move on with this scheme,
And what
and that is
are they?
hindering a lot of
Because, Councillor, I often just sort of look at my own situation. Like, I have a mortgage. If my house had defective concrete, I would have to go and borrow. If it was like, I'd have to go and borrow 20, 30, 40 grand. I don't know how much. What is the upfront cost? Like, I'm quite normal. I certainly would not have access to money. It would be another loan on top of the mortgage if I could get
I
approval for it.
Yeah, I hear you, Greg, and I'm hearing this every single day of the week from families, you know, wanting to move on, but financially they just can't because of the shortfall, because they know they need their foundations at a bare minimum tested at a cost before they decide to remove them. But, you know, you need to have an average 50,000 in your back pocket ready to pay builders, ready to pay deposits, ready to get the work moving on site. And this is something I've been pressing time and time again in the council, that we need the upfront money to get people moving on, you know. And you know, this is something I intend to push for, because a lot of people don't have borrowing power, Greg. Let's be realistic about it. You know, we have elderly people in these homes, and I've been in some of these homes, as we all probably have at this stage, and the conditions they're living in are absolutely horrendous. And those people do not see, those elderly people don't have the borrowing power, so therefore can't engage with this scheme. They have no intention of engaging.
And also, too, if you do have the borrowing power, my understanding as well, say, for instance, with the likes of the Derelict Properties Grant and what have you, that lending institutions generally don't like to consider grants as some sort of a collateral or proof of payment down the road. So you have to have, you know, the credit rating. Forgetting about what you might plan to do with the property.
Exactly.
So
I'll just give you an example,
No,
Greg,
please
someone
do.
I was actually speaking to over the weekend, if I may.
I would like
a
that.
Gentleman has completed his rebuild, but in the meantime, he's had to put a stall on his mortgage. His mortgage company allowed him to stall his mortgage. Also, he had to then take out a loan of 50,000 from the credit union. So prior to finding out he had defective blocks, his monthly outgoing for his home was a mortgage of €495. As it stands today, now he has rebuilt his home, he's just coming in under €1,600 a month to pay back loans, credit cards that he had to take out just to complete his home. And this is what he's facing. He's on his knees financially trying to furnish those loans and repayments. And that's the truth of it. And I'll be honest with you, Greg, when I'm in the council chamber and I hear government councillors telling me that this scheme is working, when I'm getting constant phone calls from people who are unable to move on with this scheme because of the financial implications, they're unable to move on with this scheme because of their mental health, it makes me so angry, because this scheme, they're basing this on the people that are moving through this scheme. You know,
no, I get that. I get that. Yeah. I mean, listen, if you go through the planning permissions every week, there are a lot of houses in that are defective concrete block affected. There are builds ongoing and those that are being completed. So that is one take. But what I'm curious of, Joy, is how many people are working? How many people, their house, right, is externally banjaxed, okay, but it's livable. Yeah. How many are sitting going, right, what if Sinn Féin get in the next election with their bells and whistles promises? Let's see how Coleman Legal's case gets on. You know, do you think a lot of people are sitting back waiting to see if a better option comes to the fore? I suspect, have a feeling a lot of people are sitting back and waiting to see how things unfold in the medium term.
Yeah, that's true. And I have been speaking to a lot of those people. A lot of people mentally cannot deal with this, Greg. It is a massive thing to happen in your life. And even though we're looking at statistics here, we have to remember this is people's lives.
All right, Joe, you were sounding great. I'm not sure if you're on a headset or if your head moved, but if you could get as close to the mic so we can hear every word you're saying, Joy, that'd be great.
Yeah. Can you hear me now,
no,
Greg?
That's perfect. Continue, yeah.
Yeah. No worries. No, Greg, what I was just saying is, you know, people have their heads in the sand, a lot of them. You know, I've seen properties and I've visited properties where people think they haven't got an issue, and it's not my place to tell them that they potentially have a problem. And there's people, as you mentioned there, waiting to see how this scheme is panning out for people. But as I was saying, look, this scheme is not working for the majority of people because of the financial constraints, Greg, and because of the fact there's no temporary housing. This is something I've been pushing for a long, long time, that we can't deal with a humanitarian crisis without having the relevant supports in place. You know, when a humanitarian crisis happens, usually there's a response team put in place to handle it. You know, given various different levels, like your technical, your medical, your financial, your mental health. However, we have no emergency responses whatsoever, you know, for all these families and individuals that currently are living in horrendous conditions, you know. And they hear, you know, that the scheme's not working. They're talking to their neighbours, they're talking to their families, and they see that the scheme's not working for them. So therefore, like, we do have 3,242 online registrations. But the majority of them are not going anywhere. You know, they've not applied to the scheme and stuff. They've just registered on the website that they may have an issue. Like you stated in your initial introduction, you know, that, you know, 102 homes in 5 years. Mm. You know, like, this is an underestimate, 30,000 homes, because we have to remember, to this day, the government has never carried out a full assessment of how many homes are actually affected, how many community buildings are affected, how many rental properties are affected. And I honestly don't know how a government can claim to be dealing with a humanitarian crisis when it hasn't even attempted to measure the full extent of what's happening.
There are different people at different stages. You know, everyone, it's like, you know, it gets worse and worse and worse. Like, if you're in an SI house or if you're in a council house, you know, people would be going, well, geez, at least you've got a scheme that you can pick and choose whether you get involved in. Like, there's a whole raft of other people. Then we get to community centres, childcare facilities, farmhouses. Yeah. You know, like, there are people listening on at this and going, I'd love to have a scheme that I don't fancy getting involved in. And that's, I don't mean that badly in any shape, way or form, but where is the people in crappy council houses? Where is the progress for them, for an example, or in the SI houses?
Well, as you know, Greg, I know you talk about this frequently on the show, like, we don't have a scheme in place yet for social houses. You know, our social houses, there's an estimated 2,000 social houses that are going to need remediated or rebuilt. And there's no scheme in place for those families. And they're living in just as bad a condition as what the private homeowners are. You know,
so what is the status there, Joy? As far as you're aware, is this waiting for a diktat from the housing minister?
That's ultimately what we're waiting on. For 2 years, we've been told it's imminent. It's imminent. The social housing scheme is imminent. It's imminent. That's all we hear. And yet here we are 2 years later, you know, and people are still living in these homes and no plans afoot, Greg. Remember, there's no plans afoot as to where all these families are going to be housed. Mm. And that is a major, major issue. I've been pleading to get some kind of accommodation to get the worst people out of the unsafe homes they're living in. And sadly, nothing is forthcoming. We're in the middle of a housing crisis. We have a defective block crisis. This is a humanitarian crisis. And it simply isn't being dealt with the urgency that it needs.
All right. OK, well, if I'm sort of the Minister for Housing, I could be sitting in my office in Dublin and saying, right, I'm trying to progress this. I'm trying to revise IS465. But there are those within the campaign that are calling for an extension for it. That extension has now been granted, which means the whole process is even further delayed now. I'm not saying that's my view at all. I think it's very important that we get any public consultation correct. But I wonder, will that be spun to say, right, you know, we were trying to progress things and it's you guys that are holding it up?
Yeah, I hear you, Greg. And as I say, I don't know the ins and outs of why that was delayed, to be honest.
Do you welcome it?
But at the end of it, I'm not sure if I welcome it. I'm seeing the trauma with people in the homes and I'm seeing the state of homes. Anything that's going to delay this. But let's get it straight, Greg. We already have the European standard there that should be used, EN 12620. We shouldn't need a bespoke Irish standard. There's a standard already in place that could be used. You know, because of the delay, I'm just worried that homeowners are going to be left in these houses longer than they need to. And it has always been the only reason I stood for councillor was to try and get these people out of these unsafe homes, because I can see that what's going to happen coming down the line if we don't get the people out of these homes. And that is my ultimate concern, that something is going to happen in these homes, you know,
Listen,
to one of these
I
families.
welcome the increase in the cap, right? But I mean,
Oh.
if someone finished just a day before that cap applies, what is it?
Yeah, the 29th,
29th
29th of
of
March,
March
29th, 24, yeah.
24. I'm like going, well, you know,
Yeah.
how do I
Well,
progress now not knowing that I'm going to miss out on a cap? You know, why should
yeah.
I get myself in 50 grand of debt if that's reviewed again
Yeah.
next year? Like, you know, it's
Yeah.
there's no,
Yeah.
it's just
Well,
for it's.
that example I gave you, Greg, is a prime example. That gentleman thought that he would be eligible for the retrospective payment. And now, because of that date, now he isn't going to be eligible for that retrospective payment, which means that loan he has out with the credit union, he's going to have to furnish that now. Whereas he thought everyone that engaged with this scheme, we have to remember early movers were not meant to be disadvantaged. And because he was one of the first to move along this scheme, he is now being disadvantaged because he did think that he would be eligible for any uplift, you know, in the rates or the cap. And now he isn't. And, you know, that has set him back now. He's going to have to furnish that loan and those credit card bills himself. He won't have that money coming in that he potentially thought he would have. So he's one of these ones. I think there's 43 people going to be left behind, Greg, as far as I know,
Yeah, but I was told
due to the time
I
scale.
asked the question if this if this cap increase. Because I can only go by what I'm told, and I feel a little bit. I was told that the majority of people that this cap lift would benefit. From what you're
Yeah.
saying, if 102 homes have been rebuilt, remediated, and 43, 43 miss out, that's almost 50%. That's not the most at all. I know maybe
No.
we can include those that are ongoing, but that's
Yeah.
almost half of people that then, half of the people. That's not the majority of people. That's almost
Not at
half the
all.
people are going to be sitting there going, I have to pay this 40, 50 grand loan now and plus credit cards for the next 5 or 10 years. I'll be 70 when I get it paid off, as an example. All
Yeah,
right,
that's
okay.
it, Greg. That is it. And
Yeah.
those people are on their knees already financially, and they've been through an awful lot of trauma. We can't ignore the mental health impact of all this, you know, on everybody's family. You know, as I say, we're looking at statistics here, but these are lives that are being affected by this ultimately, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the funny thing is the whole conversation is about a tiny fraction of people that are actually properly fully engaging in the scheme. The
Yeah, and.
overwhelming majority aren't. So one question, I thought that there were social houses fixed in Buncrana, says a listener. Were the houses in Marion Park not fixed? I'm not sure if you know that particular case, Joy. I'm not putting you on the spot, but
No, I think some remediation work was done, Greg,
yeah, they're doing a
as a
bit of that, yeah.
temporary measure.
No,
Yeah,
I know
temporary measure.
myself. Some cracks have been filled and dam painted over, and some we're talking about rebuilds or replacements. Okay, Joy, thanks for that. I do appreciate
Okay.
your time. Take care of yourself.
Not at
That's
all. Thank you.
Councillor Joy Baird there for 100% redress party. So Coleman Legal, that case there, the law firm representing thousands of homeowners affected by defective concrete blocks, they've welcomed the decision by the National Standards Authority of Ireland to extend the public consultation on the revised IS465 standard by 6 weeks until the 11th of July. They've only received 400 comments. I don't think that's an awful lot at all, to be honest with you, on such a big issue. But I should say, I've kind of suggested that maybe it might delay the process further. But the statement reads that this is a departure from standard procedure, but one designed to expedite finalisation of the revised standard. I'll wait and see that. Hopefully that's the case. But anyway, right. Thanks so much to Joy. Listening to the housing segment, my heart is broken at the thought that we are going through this nightmare. And now to find out, we may need to find 50k up front before anything happens. We're only at the very start of the process as we buried our heads in the sand and tried to patch things ourselves. And that's okay. You know, lots and lots of people did that, doubted that it could be that. What when we are faced with major crises in life, we do have a tendency to protect ourselves, and that's all you did. Don't beat yourself up on it anyway. I had my house sampled February. They're saying 7 months for lab results to come back. Definitely has defective blocks, as the samples fell apart when they were extracted. Morning, Greg. Can someone tell us why no council homes with defective concrete blocks are being repaired? It seems to be all private homes. None of our councillors, including 100% councillors, have an answer. Well, they're waiting on, and I put this question to the housing minister when he was up, that a scheme for council properties to be announced shortly, he said. The person, the best person by far to help people with defective concrete houses was Charlie McConnell Logue. The DCB councillors and Charles Ward have done zero work except complain. Mr McConnell Logue has continuously worked for this and got ministers to come up to the county, they say. Right, now, Dr Joe Kelly, our historian and also a teacher, and we're going to be favouring the second cap, I think, in this conversation, joins us now. Good morning, Joe Magin Y on Walter Gamay.
Hey, good morning to yourself and to all listening in Highland Radio.
Right, now, exams, the educational curriculum and the proposed direction of Irish education. Talk to me about this and why are we talking about it now? Why is now a pertinent time?
Well, what's happening at the moment, there's a massive change in Irish education. And in particularly in the last number of years, say since 2016, there's been a massive change in the whole direction of the junior cert. And now the progress into the leaving cert is going to start now this September. And so there's a whole debate about that and where we're going and why we're doing it. And what are the founding principles for this? What's it all about? Why do we do it? And I think the day of parents leaving their children at the front door of the school and thinking all is well is rather naive. Mm. And I say that to parents and grandparents listening. You need to know what's happening in the education system, and all isn't as it might seem.
Well, we'll tease that out in a moment. But, you know, flags were raised in 23 and we spoke about maths paper one. Just remind us of the controversy and our conversation at that time, because there's more concerns being expressed this year.
Well, look, it's very hard. I imagine that the State Examination Commission that set the papers, the SEC as it's called, gets it always right. They do amazing work and they generally do get a good balance and fairness to them. And now and again, when something goes wrong, you know, you're using a hammer to crack a nut, so to speak. But in 2021, I remember being on your programme talking about the maths paper. It was a Friday evening and it upset a lot of the Leaving Cert students, the paper one maths paper, and wondering was paper two going to be as bad. There was a question on it that just wasn't in line with what was being taught or what was on the curriculum. And again, we had something of this controversy last week with the English paper for junior cert, where they asked a short story question. Look, technically it's on the curriculum. I'm not an English teacher, but it's usually put alongside a novel. It's either or. But on this occasion, there was no either or. And so it was interesting how the Irish Times wrote it. And I quote that they say, like, some students were found short. It was like a curveball and unable to answer the question. I would argue that most students would have been in that position. And looking at what's happening online and what English teachers were saying, they were generally happy with the paper, but they weren't happy with that short question. And it's the first time that happened. But the SEC, the State Examination Commission, came back and said, look, it's within their right to do this. It's within the scope of the curriculum. And they talk about how they have a rigorous development of the process, etc. And so technically that is correct. The thing is that it concerns me is it's something more fundamental than that. We have a new curriculum, for example, in junior cert, and we're now going to tamper with the Leaving Cert. And I have serious, serious concerns as to the Leaving Cert programme that has been proposed. Helen McEntee is ploughing on. She's not looking left and right. She's ploughing on. And I just... Let's go back to the junior cert before we get to the leaving cert. Take, for example, the English exam paper. I don't know if parents are aware of this, but there are 12 questions normally, between 24 and 28 pages to be written in 2 hours. Mm. That is unbelievable pressure for even an adult to try to undertake 12 questions spanning over 24, 28 pages. And that includes having to read, comprehend, and then answer. And I think that's a serious problem. You go to history. I'm a history teacher. Again, you've usually 9 with some sub questions to be answered in 2 hours. There's no ordinary or higher. It's common paper for history. And again, it extends over 24 pages. The pressure to do that is phenomenal. And I, again, I'm very concerned about that. Go to even the geography paper. And on the geography paper, I read it this year, the geography paper, and it says not the questions do not all carry equal marks. So on the exam paper are questions, but there's no marks beside the questions. So a student doesn't know, is this question worth more than the next one? Should I be making 3 points or 4 points or 1 point? Mm. Do you know what it would remind you of? Donegal playing Mayo at the weekend, and the referee saying, no, we're not going to decide how many marks or points you get for scoring outside the D or what you get for a point or a goal. And when the game's over, we'll decide that. Mm. And we'll decide, for example, that if you score a goal, it's only 1 point. If you score a point over the bar, it's 3 points. And if you score outside the D, it's 2 points. Like, how in God's name...
Is there no argument that, you know, obviously you don't want it to be so tough that it's unfair. Is there no argument that, you know, life is tough and maybe the junior cert is where you sort of put it up to them and say, right, you know, sink or swim?
I'm a big believer in that. But tough is not the same as being fair.
Yeah.
Being fair is giving them a fair crack at it and knowing this is what's expected. And if you don't meet that standard, then the axe will fall on the result, so to speak. But I think it's very, very disingenuous. Another example of the failure of the junior cert curriculum is for Irish, and I'm an Irish teacher, and we've said this again and again and again, and we're getting nowhere. And like our own school, and I don't want to be particularly isolating talking about my own, but we realise this problem, and we're carrying on irrespective in trying to create oral Irish within the junior cert curriculum. It's worth 40% of the Leaving Cert exam. The wisdom of the Department of Education was to remove the oral exam from the junior cert. So there's no oral component.
That makes no sense at all.
And yet you go to the Leaving Cert and it's worth... This is what I'm saying. There's no joint up thinking. So what I'm trying to say is...
These aren't siloed. One exam really should be seen as the beginning of the next. That I haven't phrased that correctly, but you know what I mean? It should be a transition from one to other.
So what we have is we have faults already in the junior cert programme. And what they're going to do now is take that model and implement that into the Leaving Cert. So the weaknesses that are already there are going to be exasperated going through to the Leaving Cert. And so it's no surprise. I know the TUI have accepted the new proposals for the curriculum that is to start in September. But the ASTI, which I'm a member of, in the majority, voted against it and said, no, we're not accepting this. It's happening too fast. There's no joined up.
Can I say one thing just in relation to it? When a union is considering these type of changes, is it purely based on those changes proposed or is it tied into other things? What I'm trying to get at is if are there other issues in teaching that a union might let something like this over the line because it might benefit them in another area? I would hope that any union that's deciding on issues like this, it's completely separate from anything else, any pay conversations, any terms and conditions, that it is only just about what is the best exam for our students.
I would hope it would be that, but there's a 5% pay increase tied into accepting it. So,
but that's fundamentally flawed, Joe, because that means that it does. I'm not saying it changes why people might vote a certain way, but it certainly casts a suspicious cloud over it. We're here trying to get the best for our kids, not the best for our pay packets.
Well, you see, the thing is, I'm riding both sides here.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I'm sorry about that. But, you know,
No. But what I'm saying is the curriculum, what I mean by this is I understand what you're saying, but the curriculum needs to be redeveloped. There's no doubt about that. Science books that were going 20 years ago are out of date with the technology we have today.
Yeah.
A great man.
Can you hold that thought? Because I'm going to get sacked if I don't take my ads. I want to come back and get that thought. And then I actually want to talk about this Be Kind policy, which I'm not familiar with. Help me with the pronunciation by Canalta.
Be Canalta, yeah. Be Canalta, be kind. 100%.
Joe Kelly's with me. Joe, we're talking about the junior-senior cycles. We're talking about the second-level education of our children, really, and beyond. And, of course, there are those who are sitting these exams later in life. What were you going to say before the break, if you can still recall?
You were talking about Be Kenilta, the new policy that the Emma Foley, before she the minister, before she... Norma Foley, before she left office in before the election, she announced this new Be Kenilta programme. And it's amazing how the government do this all the time. They put an Irish word or two Irish words before a document and it sounds lovely, be kind. And that's what it is. And it's at the heart of it is about how we function as schools, be it national secondary schools or education system, and particularly in regards to bullying and things like that. But what I find offensive about the document is that it's more or less what I would say is we've had no choice but by diktat to accept it. But have we not been kind? Have I not been kind over my 20, 30 years teaching? Have other teachers not been kind? Have we been failing?
It's the problem not, though, that it can be hit and miss, Joe, like that you can get schools that excel in terms of controlling bullying and the life of students, but some schools really fail. So you try and bring everybody up. It's not to sort of say that you haven't done brilliant, but it's ensure that everyone meets the standards that you've set.
Well, then there's a reflection then poorly on the Department of Education's inspectorate. You see, this is where it comes back to again. You know, it reminds me a wee bit like, it's like the signs that you've seen probably on bog roads. I seen one up there, up in Mount Charles, up near a beach there. You couldn't even put a car on it or a tractor on them, but they have a sign up with the four white lines. This is what we do. We do all this signalling, virtue signalling, but we'll actually deliver nothing. If the Kigara inspectorate are doing their job, then they should find that school policies aren't up to scratch. But I would argue that most schools' policies have been up to scratch. And what I see to be kind of personally, and this is not a view that maybe, you know, that is reflective of any group or anything, but just my own personal view, it's all about DEI, diversity, inclusivity and equality. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a kind of it opens a door for zealot ideologies to be pushed through the education system, which we already have.
So in other words, if, say, for instance, it was about, I don't know, the thorny topic of gender, that you couldn't necessarily oppose it or speak out against it because you would not be being kind. Is that what you're saying? So that it muzzles anything alternative to the agenda.
Exactly. And therefore, you know, when you think of what we have with the whole Enoch Burke story, that won't happen elsewhere because you're breaking the B. Kenilta policy. So fundamentally, your conscience can't come into it. So there's a whole social engineering going on. And look, research has shown, for example, in Texas, which is the biggest African-American population, has the second biggest Hispanic population. They have got rid of DEI. Because the research has shown that's diversity, inclusivity and equality, that it hasn't increased math scores, it hasn't increased reading, it hasn't created any more unity between cultures and peoples. And more importantly, the SAT tests, what they have in America, the scholastic aptitude test, which has been going since 1927, actually has declined. Mm-hmm. And they put all this money into DEI and found that it hasn't actually worked. And they're going back more to the 3 R's.
No, I mean, listen, and you know, again, this is another thorny subject. But I mean, at the end of the day, if you have a school population that changes and say, for instance, some of the students' first language isn't English or English isn't used all of the time, and you try and adapt your curriculum to be inclusive to those people, invariably it's going to lower the standard across the board. I don't think that's controversial, but it has to, because you aren't, you know what I mean, you're adapting to accommodate, but that means that you're not then able, that means that the those that can achieve to a higher standard aren't necessarily. Just stay where you are. John, a brief word from you if you don't mind, John, but thank you for accepting the invite to talk to us. What's your quick comment on the exams and the state of exams?
Oh, good morning. How you doing? I think, to be honest, the education system's out of date. I think we're educating kids on, I would say the majority, I would even go and say as far as 80 to 90% of the stuff will never be used in their entire lives. Where we're missing out on is academic stuff that they'll need in every day, things that they're not able to do, such as load a dishwasher, empty a washing machine, hang out a washing outside, how to even operate a brush.
Cook
a lot of kids now,
John.
I have 100%, I think, that, and the most importantly of all is communication skills. Mm. The majority of young people coming nowadays can't lift the head out of their phone to say hello to somebody if somebody says hello to them. Mm-hmm. I think we've lost it completely. Majority of education stuff, you can pick up your phone, you can ask Google. You can nearly wire a house now looking at internet videos and how to do, you know what I mean? Mm. I just think we're missing out on, we're drumming on stuff to them, and as I said, that we'll never use. Mm. But for me, I think it should be educating them on stuff that they'll need in everyday life.
I hope it's not the case that we're not classifying the lack of communication skills because of mobile phones and what have you as something else, you know, putting names on things than really what it is about us failing the education of our children.
Well, Greg, can I give you a very quick example? I had a young fellow out last week helping me to sand floors. I had an industrial sander hired for to do the centre, but as you know yourself, it doesn't do round the edges. So I asked a young fellow, I said, I'll give you a few pounds, I'll give you a good day's salary. Could you come out and help me? And he goes, oh, he was all excited. I was at his house for 9 o'clock. I took into consideration he was still young. I was there for 9. He wasn't ready to 11. And when we finally got to the job, I was showing him what to do. No bother at all. He got started. But there was one time where I stopped and I went upstairs. The sander was lying on its side, running, and he was on his phone.
Mm-hmm. Not ideal. That's common sense. You see, I do find myself, and I have to be careful with the examples I give because I have to go home.
Yeah.
But I do find some common sense is that doesn't that. All right, John. Listen, thanks for your point. It's a good point made. I don't know what it is about the clock and you, Joe, but as soon as I start speaking to you, it seems to move at twice the speed. So, do you want to wrap up on this issue in a minute?
Quickly, just John's point, and he makes it very, very well. A point, the idea that education should be moving with the times and it should enable students to do things in life. But what people need to remember that in any academic year, students spend about 1,200 hours at school. The 6,000 plus hours are not in school. And the skills that they need to be learning isn't necessarily the skills that can always be taught in the school, that there's a joint responsibility, that 6 times more time is spent outside the school than in the school. And there's a lot of learning to be done in that. But look, at the end of the day, what teachers are about is about encouragement and about giving people opportunities. And we have heard of JISH schools, delivering equality in secondary schools. A great idea. It gives people, what you were talking about, standards falling. JISH encourages standards to rise. It's a brilliant policy, JISH as opposed to DEI. But I just want maybe to end with one wonderful story that people may appreciate. Canon Tommy Doherty, he was a Donegal Man of the Year. He was a parish priest at Dunfanaghy. When I used to teach in St. Eunan's, I used to go and visit him in the evenings. Himself and his sister Rose was his housekeeper. They were elderly at that stage. And I enjoyed many, many happy hours talking with him. But I remember him telling me the story as a young 12-year-old boy going to the steps of St. Eunan's College to do the entrance exam. And he didn't have Irish. And so there were 3 exams, English, Irish and maths, and he was going to fail Irish. So what was the point in him going in to do the exam? And he met his older brother that was in the school coming down the steps as he was going in. And the older brother says, what are you doing up here? He says, well, I'm doing the entrance exam. And at that time, there were very few secondary schools in Donegal. Very, very few people got a secondary education. So he says, well, you're here, go in and do it. So Canon Doherty went in. And what did he do? He looked at the Irish paper and he couldn't understand a simple word in it. So he told me he opened up his A3 page, folded out the 2 A4 page. And he says, I spent 45 minutes and I wrote the word ta, T-A, father. And I weaved Celtic design through it the whole 45 minutes. And when the exam was over, I closed over the paper and I handed it up. He actually was accepted into St. Eunan's. And he asked the lecturer, the professor that was there at the time, how did I pass that exam? And what the teacher told him, a wee boy with that much talent deserved to be given a chance in life. And so the message should always be, as teachers and as educators, is ta, that we believe in the students and we give them a chance. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and I think it's like anything that we teach in schools, whatever we decide to do, has to have an awful lot of consultation, teachers, students, parents, you know, and we do have to take more of a role, I think, because what happens is someone puts up a tweet or a Facebook post saying, do you know this is being taught in school? And everyone panics and go, no, it can't happen. No, blah, blah. But what do you know about the curriculum? You know, what do we know about the curriculum? Have we downloaded some of these documents and actually read them ourselves? No. We haven't. We just get angry because we trust one other person's opinion. Okay, Joe, as always, thank you very much indeed. Take care of yourself.
Imagine why.
That is Dr. Joe Kelly there, a teacher. Any views in relation to what Joe's talking about there? 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text. Or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Some interesting comments coming in on various topics. There was an interesting question some of you messaged in about a listener. They've started doing some TikTok videos at work. They're in the workplace. They're not on social media themselves, but now they're being asked to participate. And they're kind of wondering, well, do I have an option? Can I not involve myself in such activity?